helping students and healthcare professionals not just survive, but thrive with a purpose. This is the CMDA Student Pulse Podcast.
Well, welcome to another episode of CMDA Student Pulse Podcast. I'm Bill Reichert, National Director for our Campus and Community Ministries here at CMDA. And my guest today is Dr. Kelly Capick. Dr. Capick.
Oh, it's so good to be with you. Thanks. This is an important topic, and your audience is one that I think probably can feel this intensely.
Yeah, agreed. As I was mentioning to you before we started our conversation, that my team and I have been reading this book. It's one of our kind of book club times where we pick up a book and take some time to digest it and talk around it. And it is just, first of all, I should tell folks, if they, you know, they end up picking up a copy of this book, that it is not a quick read. It really slows you down. You really have to think through and digest and meditate on the things that you're going to be, you know, that you address in the book and that we're going to discuss. But it's so worth that investment. And it is just, yeah, it has been a great centerpiece for our conversations in this past year. So thank you for it.
Oh, that's encouraging. Yeah, great.
So you're only human. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what is the big idea of the book, and why did you write it? Because you've written so much, and I imagine a book like this, maybe it was stirring inside of you for a while, or there was some reason for you to want to have to write a book like this. Why was that?
Yeah, it's a good question. For me, I mean, there's some theological reasons. I'm a theologian at a university, Covenant College. That's my full-time job. But so there's some theological things driving it, but there's also some really personal things. And some of it's just as simple as, like many listeners probably, and maybe you experience this, I'd kind of get to the end of my day, and I just kind of feel, especially when I put my head on the pillow at night and it's quiet and dark, it finally can think. And I'd be kind of amazed how often, like, this rush of guilt or shame would come over me. And, you know, I'm a theologian. If I remember things through my days, maybe a way I manipulated someone or was greedy or whatever, I want to repent and bask in God's kindness. But what I started to realize is, so often that wave of guilt and shame, when I finally slowed down, was so often associated with this voice that said, Kelly, why didn't you get more done today? Why didn't you get more done? And for me, it took a long time to finally go, wait, is that God's voice? Is that something else? Like, what is that? Is that growing up? Is that a cultural thing? What's going on? And so this really has been something in my own life I've been thinking about and wrestling with for literally decades. And so it was fun to finally be able to start to put words to the page as I more publicly, with the encouragement of others, kind of started to work through these things. And the big idea is, for Christians, I think we've often confused finitude and sin. Finitude's not a word we use a lot in our day. Right. It's just a fancy word that means limits, limits in space, time, knowledge, and power. Like, you can only be one place at a time. You can only know so much. Yeah. So that's the limit. So it's, finitude means limits. But the Christian word for that is creature. To be a creature is, by definition, to be finite. And yet, I think we often, even though we don't say it this way, we often feel like just being creaturely, having limits, is sinful. And I really think it's important for us to see that our limits aren't sinful. In fact, they're part of God's design. They're not a bug. They're a feature.
Wow. Yeah, that's going to strike a chord with many of, well, anybody who's an American, particularly culturally, certainly those within healthcare. I think that strikes a chord. How do we press up against that? Because we're obviously not going to be satisfied with that paradigm that we are finite creatures, that we do have limits. So how do we try to press against that? What are some of the ways that we continually try to push against those limits?
Yeah, in all kinds of ways. I mean, if you start going through your life, you know, I think, how many of us do kind of at the end of our week or month or year, you know, do these exercises and you look back and you think, yeah, I'm just crushing it. Right? I'm getting all the exercise I should get. I'm spending all the time at work that I think I should and you know, keeping up with the literature, whatever it is. My house I'm keeping up with, my relationships. I'm spending all the time with the kids I should. Mm-hmm. And actually what happens is there's almost no area, at least if you're like me, no area in life where you're like, yeah, I'm doing it the best or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so we need to think through that. Like, what does that mean? Because there are all these spoken and unspoken expectations, not just outside of the church, but within the church, mm-hmm. where we just paint such unrealistic expectations that I really think it hurts us. And it's interesting, when I began my research, one of the big things I thought was, oh, this is all technology's fault. Like, this is the phone, our cell phone's mm-hmm. fault. And I still think that's a problem, but I started to think that's more of a sign of a deeper problem. Mm-hmm. In other words, we're constantly looking to our phones and binging Netflix because we desperately need distraction, because otherwise we're just constantly overwhelmed with the to-dos. Mm. And so I think it helps to start to think about that as a medication. I'm not saying it's healthy. I'm just saying we could start to be more kind to ourselves and start to think about what's going on more deeply.
Yeah. I mean, we are embodied creatures. I mean, you said we have a physicality to us because we can only be in one space at a time. How helpful it is for us to lean into being embodied? How does that help us understand our finitude, and how do we, again, maybe press up against that, and what are the ways that being embodied is, to your earlier point, a real gift, and again, a feature, mm-hmm. not a bug?
Yeah, it's great. And for, you know, it seems like so many in your audience are related in the medical fields. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, very brief background, before I wrote the book You're Only Human, about the goodness of our limits, I wrote a book called Embodied Hope because this is a very short version, but my wife and I got married in 1993, mm-hmm. didn't have kids for 9 years. And in 2008, she got a form of cancer that's normally women in their 80s get it. Mm. And after a season and surgeries, she was eventually, you know, a year so later declared cancer free. But then about a year later, and so we thought that was really hard, God, mm-hmm. but okay, we got through it. And then about a year later, starting in 2010, to this day, on a June day, a chronic pain developed, and there's never been a day without pain and fatigue in her life. Mm-hmm. So I say all that because I wrote a book called Embodied Hope, which is about our bodies and the importance of being honest about lament and the aches we feel, and that we don't need to apologize. We like, there's something we can lean into about, like, this isn't good, mm-hmm. right? This pain and suffering is not good. But it was only after dealing with being honest about those things that I felt finally able to talk about the goodness of being human. Mm-hmm. And so there is a difference between suffering and just being a creature, mm-hmm. and starting to see. So for example, for me, the humanity of Jesus has become really important theologically and pastorally. One of the chapters which was really fun to research and write, was on the importance of Mary, mm-hmm. and Mary giving birth to this baby. And, you know, there's an early church father named Tertullian who has this book on the carne Christi, on the flesh, the carnage on the flesh of Christ. And it's all about Mary giving birth. Mm. And he's talking about afterbirth, which you're like, is that irreverent? And his whole point is, this is all good and natural. This is how much God loves the world. He's not embarrassed by this. Mm. So anyways, trying to distinguish what is just being a creature and what is sinful or a problem.
Stay tuned for more of this story. The Student Pulse podcast returns in just a moment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much from all of us at CMDA.
Well, hello, CMDA family, and Happy New Year. I want to thank you for taking a moment to join me. I'm here today with a very simple message, and that is thank you. In 2025, God moved powerfully through your CMDA, your faithfulness, through your prayers and your financial support, they helped open doors for ministry in extraordinary ways. Because of you, CMDA was able to bring the hope and healing of Christ to the world through healthcare professionals who love Him. From our youngest students to our retired members and ministry partners, and the many practicing professionals in between, your generosity allowed us to educate and to encourage and equip Christian healthcare professionals to glorify God through healthcare and to advance His kingdom. Well, we've just wrapped up an incredible year-end giving season with a goal of $1.3 million. And I want you to know, every gift that you gave is already making an impact that will last far beyond this year and this decade. Every dollar is at work right now, meeting the physical and spiritual needs of people all around the world. Thank you, friends, for standing with your CMDA. Thank you for giving generously, and thank you for being a vital part of this healthcare culture shaping ministry called the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. God bless you.
Well, there was a lot in this book that kind of meddled. That was kind of meddlesome in my life. Because one of the areas of the humility aspect of how being creaturely and the finitude of ourselves kind of presses us into greater humility. Being able to say, I don't know.
Mm.
Can you help me? I like to figure things out on my own first, and I may cry for help. I might read the instructions for that IKEA project I'm working on up until the point that I get frustrated and I can't figure it out. But up until then, I want to be able to do it myself. So talk maybe a little bit about this idea of humility and how it relates to being finite.
Yeah. Humility was really, it's great. I think one of the ways to think about it as an entryway is if you ask most Christians why, you know, hopefully, I don't know, it's become more debated in our day, which makes me sad. But most Christians are going to admit, like, we should be a humble people, right? That's like a positive work of the Spirit. But the interesting question is, if you ask, why should we be humble? And my experience is that most Christians immediately, our gut response is, well, we should be humble because we're sinners. I do think we're sinners. I think the fact that we're sinners should contribute to our humility. But in the history of the church, whenever we try and build the idea of humility on the foundation of sin, it actually distorts the whole thing. So that when people know, I want to grow in humility, what they're told is, therefore, to grow in humility, focus on what a terrible sinner you are, which ironically often fosters self-absorption, which is not humility. So if you build humility not on sin as a foundation, but on the goodness of creation, it really changes things. So to skip a lot of steps, let's just jump to a simple question. Adam and Eve, before the fall, before they sinned, should they have been humble? And my answer is yes. So that's actually interesting. And it's interesting because that means before there's any sin, before there's a fall in the world, Adam and Eve should have been humble, which, and here's the idea, because they were made out of the goodness, part of the good way God made the world, they're made to be dependent on God, dependent on their neighbor, and dependent on the rest of creation. And dependence is a positive. But as you and I know, like if someone hears, hey, you talked to Bill this week, how was that? And I'm like, oh, good guy. He seems really dependent on a lot of people, though.
Exactly.
Like in our culture, that's never a positive, right?
No.
But for Christian discipleship, growing in healthy dependence is fundamental. Dependence on God, one another, and the world. And that's what fosters gratitude. So yeah, I think it's a fascinating thing. So I love how you remembered and you captured it. So humility doesn't just say, I'm sorry. It says, hey, can you help me? Or I just don't know. And that's not bad.
No. You also touched in the idea that we need other people, that this is a dependence on other people. How does community play a part in helping us, again, lean in and live out that, finitude?
Yeah, it would be interesting to, have a nurse on this or someone else with some of these things. Because I have actually been working with nurses, and I'm Sarah Templeton from Biola University, and I have just written an article on finitude in nursing because the dropout rate is so high for nurses in the first 1 to 3 years. But the equivalent is like in the church, you have all these wonderful ministries happening, right? Whether it's youth ministry or something to the poor, or you know, prison ministries, or the, you know, you name it. There's a ton of things. And when we hear those, especially if you have a sensitive heart, you think, oh, that's a really good ministry, I need to sign up. And then the next week, oh, I need to sign up. And you know how this goes. So it's actually overwhelming. And that tends to mean in our day, we have people either way overcommitted, or we have other people who are like, I'm not doing that. And so they don't do anything. And so how do you cultivate this? I am really important and really, really small. So I matter, and I'm. This is where I'm kind of interested in the healthcare industry, because it seems to show up in different ways. But I really matter, but I can't try and do all of this. And we really do need one another, and we need to stop competing and figure out how to do this together.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? What do you think?
Well, I think it's becoming less of the competition and more of a collaboration and a team. You know, I think I see a lot of medicine being kind of team-centered, trying to build teams around.
That's encouraging.
Yeah, healthcare. Now, again, there's still remnants of old thoughts and ideas and behaviors, but I see that as a general trend and shift towards trying to include others as part of one's healthcare team, rather than thinking that there's a solo physician that is, you know, solo and in charge, when really it's a team of individuals coming alongside any given patient. So,
but yeah, that's good.
Yeah, no, this is good. And I now have my book open to probably one of the biggest convicting chapters, which was, do I have enough time? I love productivity books and stuff like that, you know, and you know, the whole term life hack, you know, gotta hack more out of your life. And I've read David Allen's book on getting things done, you know, and all the classics. There was a book a while back, I think it's Matt Perelman, What's Best Next? I don't know if you've read it.
Oh, right, yep.
I think he came out of Desiring God in that ministry, and it was such a good, it did such a good job at really framing productivity in a biblical way, in a way that honored God, that was dependent upon the Lord, understanding one's finitude and limitations as such. So I really appreciated this chapter, chapter 7, on do I have enough time? Clocks, anxiety, and presence. When we're not living with that understanding of the finitude that we have, how do we struggle against living in the moment, being present? And what are some of the challenges we face as we go about our day and organizing our day?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I do think we feel it, and even, I think, put your finger on it at the end there, that if I had to summarize, I think our challenge is presence, to be present with one another, to be present with God. And this was another fun area I didn't anticipate. I didn't plan to research all this work on clocks. You're like, why is that in a book by a theologian? But the more I dug in, the more it just became so fascinating, where there's this whole development of how we think of time that's historically kind of, you know, in 1941, something like that, in the 1940s, there's a famous essay, which most people wouldn't remember the author or the title, but they, as soon as I tell you the title, it'll resonate, but it was called The Tyranny of Time. We're talking in the 40s in the 20th century, and the argument was, already by that time, the argument was the distinguishing factor between their time and all earlier times was this different conception of the clock. And we really do think of time now in terms of productivity and efficiency. I'm as Western as they get. I'm like you. I like quote-unquote time management and stuff. But I've and I'm not against trying to be efficient and productive. It's quite important in my life in some ways, but I've also seen, especially maybe because I love it so much, how seductive and destructive it can be. So that, I mean, even, you don't even have to go into the ancient world. Many listeners will know that different parts of the world to this day, and you know, sociologists will talk about the difference between what they'll call contextual and non-contextual views of time. And so we live in a non-contextual view of time, which is clock time, which means if you have an hour of work to do, you do it because every hour is the same. So if it's 10:30 at night, it doesn't matter what your body chemistry is. It doesn't matter if there's a kid sick in the back room. None of that. It doesn't matter if it's dark outside. None of that matters. Well, all that matters is there's an hour and you have an hour of work to do. Hmm. Whereas, you know, historically and certainly large parts of the world to this day live in what they call contextual time, event time. So things last as long as they should, but it's just a different kind of thing. And I don't want to romanticize one culture versus another, but it's just we can learn from one another. And I do think this drive to efficiency and productivity is hurting us because, again, to make a long story short, one of the most inefficient, if not the most inefficient thing you can possibly do, it's to love somebody, right? Or a puppy, right? When you love something or someone, it starts to make demands on you. You lose the ability to be productive. And you can tell whether it's parent or a spouse or someone else, when they are treating you like you're just something to get through, because they're so valuing productivity and efficiency, it just crushes the relationship.
Stay tuned for more of this story. The Student Pulse podcast returns in just a moment.
If you, as a health practitioner, have seen four patients, probably one of them, statistically, is experiencing chronic pain. That's a big problem. When emotions are involved, it becomes much harder for CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, to impact pain. They're more than that. People are more than just their physical selves. They are emotional selves also. And we are able to address that as Christians, and we need to.
Well, what you're saying, I'm thinking, can be so analogous to what our healthcare professionals are facing, because the healthcare profession is now so built on productivity and efficiency. They're looking at that patient. Is that patient just somebody they have to get through so that they can do the EMRs, they can code and get out and get to the next patient, because they've got to get a certain amount of patients
financially
per day. I see what you're saying is such a relevance to the constituencies that we minister with. Definitely.
Yeah. And I always feel for the healthcare, you know, whether it's a nurse practitioner or a physician or whatever, sometimes you're in the office and you're like, well, I have this rash, and they're already, because of these larger factors, they're often feeling this pressure. Like, let me just go ahead and get you a prescription. And you're like, no, but there's these other things going on inside of me. And if you treat the rash without knowing this, you're going to mistreat, you know? So I think it's fascinating. I would be really interested to see some further reflection on what it means to be present with patients, right? Again, we still have to be honest and realistic about what that means financially and otherwise, but there's got to be some ways to rethink this.
I think what I've heard, again, I'm not in the medical profession directly. I wasn't trained, but I'm working alongside these healthcare professionals, and what I hear them saying is the simple act of eye contact can do a lot. But they're constantly feeling like doctors are looking down at their tablets, their records, having to, again, there's very little time to get through what needs to get through. And so they just, they don't make that eye contact. And simple things like that can go a long way, make a patient feel like they're seen and heard.
Yeah, you even think about, and obviously this could go wrong quickly, and I assume your listeners will get that, but so often with Jesus, healing was associated also with touch.
You cover that in the book too, don't you?
Yeah, and just kind of what is healthy, appropriate, you know, honorable touch look like? But it is, and like you said, eye contact. These things are, without them, we become dehumanized, put it that way.
What has been some of the feedback you've been getting from individuals as they've had a chance to digest this and interact with it? What are you hearing?
Yeah, super encouraging, to be honest with you. Well, encouraging and discouraging. It's kind of discouraging how many people it's resonating with.
That's me.
I talked to a lot of, you know, I speak in conferences and churches, but it's interesting. I also get asked to speak to groups of pastors because they're so overwhelmed. And there have been settings in healthcare and some others. It was interesting a few years ago, a hospital paid for it, but some chaplains out in Texas, they had me come, and it was a, you know, from all I could tell, it was basically a secular hospital, but they wanted someone to come in and talk about these things, and it could be in light of faith, but to try and help people understand and imagine they're not terrible people for feeling exhausted. They do have to make some hard decisions, and it just created some interesting places where physicians and administrators and others could talk and think through those things.
I imagine you had some goals or objectives or some, or at least an expectation or desire that this book, the things that you were talking about, the things you wanted people to wrestle through would have some kind of impact on the other side of it. What would be some of those things as you think about someone reading this and interacting? And because, you know, you, like I said, this is a very dense book. There's a lot here to take in. What would you hope a person would come out on the other end knowing, but more than just knowing intellectually, knowing in their heart and soul, knowing, and how would it be changing their life? How would you see that?
Oh, yeah. Thank you for asking that. And I should say, I think I forgot, because when we arranged this, it was some time ago. Yeah. But very recently, I just had a, because the book is a little dense and a little thicker, I wrote a 40-day devotional where everything is much shorter, called You Were Never Meant to Do It All. And it is a way of just 800 words a day, slowly thinking through it. And it's much briefer. But honestly, you know, this is always uncomfortable when you talk about your work, but honestly, the most amazing things are kind of the emails, the notes, the voice messages I get, where, and it's different ages. You know, there have been teenagers, and I've gotten notes from retired people about these things. I mean, because some that we haven't even talked about is there's an important section on basically what does God think about you? And because it's related to our finitude, our particularity, and we often, if you ask most Christians, do you think God loves you? We all say yes. But just like when I'm dealing with students in my office and I say, hey, do you think your parents love you? Because they're dealing with some stuff. And they always say yes. But then if I ask, well, do you think your mom or do you think your dad actually likes you?
Yeah.
The tears often just start to roll.
Yeah.
And I find actually, if you move the question from, do you think God loves you? Of course, he's God. He has to. It's like your parent. They're required to love you. But if you say, do you think he delights in you? Do you think that? Now it's a very different question. And that's all related to being a finite creature too. So for me, the great joy and encouragement is when people like, this genuinely has changed how I'm navigating life.
Well, yeah, because you're bringing in the fundamentals of the gospel, that we are deeply loved sons and daughters of the King, that there's that he doesn't just love us, but he's kind of giving us the stink eye too, because he's, you know, he's thinking, you know, after some time we should have figured this out. No, he dances over us. He loves us. He delights in us. Yeah. He's not tired of hearing from us. And yeah, I think that gospel undergirds everything that you're writing about, because it's going to get us to a place that we can, in our finitude, be able to put and trust and yield our lives, surrender our lives to the Lord. So,
yeah. And just a lot of us have these internal and sometimes external voices that are so condemning.
Yes.
Right. And when those voices are not kind of calibrated with reality, it really can breed all kinds of problems.
Yeah, very true. Well, you were correct. We haven't covered everything. Again, there's so much. I was hoping, though, what I would want our audience, particularly our trainees and others within healthcare, to do is to be curious enough to explore this. And I'm glad you mentioned the devotional. I think that is a great way to, again, slow down and digest these things as well. You know, our healthcare professionals are busy people, but they do read, and they're always they're lifelong learners. And so I just would encourage that this book isn't just a self-help book. Hey, I'm just going to change and massage the externals and the surface, but it really gets to some deep-rooted beliefs and understanding of who we are as creaturely, as finite people, and how we entrust our lives to a infinite God who loves us and cares for us. So,
And I don't normally do this, but just talking to you made me realize.
Yeah.
I have a little of an invitation for your audience, and no one has to do it if they don't want. But
okay.
I mentioned that I'm working with this nurse who's now in the academic world,
okay.
And we have an article coming out. But we're actually going to work on a tiny little book for like incoming nursing students.
Ooh.
And any in your audience who look up my name, and mm-hmm. maybe if you read some of the book, if you have stories or if you have insights or things you wish I knew about the ways that this particularly might relate to and the challenges of being in the healthcare industry, whatever form,
mm-hmm.
I'd love it. It'd be great. So no pressure, but an open invitation.
Fair enough. And we'll try to get that information, how they can reach out to you.
That's great.
Do that in the show notes.
My address is right online, so it's good.
Okay. Easy to find.
It's on the Covenant College website, so I can't hide.
Okay. Good. Well, good. As we're kind of coming to a close in our time and conversation, Kelly, anything you want to leave with the audience and those listening?
That's great. For me, it's become really helpful to realize that the goal of the Christian life is that we would become truly and fully human, not superhuman. And for whatever reason, I think I just absorbed, like many people, that really to be Christian means we should be stronger, faster, whatever. And actually, we're just made to love God and our neighbor. And growing as a Christian means growing in that love. It doesn't mean just doing more. So the goal of the Christian life is to be fully human, not superhuman.
No, that may be the title of the podcast. that's
great.
That's a great way to land it. Kelly Capick, thank you so much for being my guest and talking through this book. And again, we're going to make that information available in the show notes, how people can get a copy. And I, again, just encourage our listeners to really interact with some of these things that you're discussing and to really allow it to kind of work through you like dough, you know, that you would be able to, that it would be transformative to your life. So thank you so much, Kelly, for taking the time to share with us the things in this book and from your own life and experience that really this book became something that you've been thinking about deeply, things that you've been wrestling with and putting it into now, you know, a book form that now we can all kind of interact with. And I appreciate that. And so thank you so much.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
All right.
Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time. CMDA Student Pulse Podcast is a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the organization. CMDA is nonpartisan and does not endorse candidates or political parties for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members.